Some planta.
What is deal, Emil? I don't know that.
Never
know what
Richard,
that is.
Not Richard Simmons. Wait, who's the guy? The exercise guy. He was very.
Yeah, happy, Richard like, Simmons is an exercise guy. Yeah.
Yeah, but he did. He used to hawk that deal, Emil program. It was designed to. That. No, you don't. It was like big in the late 80s, early 90s. Richard Simmons deal-a-meal. Here, I'll send you the link. But it was essentially, it was kind of a card.
No, I see. Yeah, it's Richard Simmons for sure.
Not a card game, but it was a way to count.
Yeah, so it was like cards. I see. I don't remember this at all. And my mom was way into Richard Simmons.
They used to have it in ads or TV. Mm-hmm. I watched a lot of TV when I was
I watched a lot of TV in this era too. I'm surprised that this one's not ringing a bell.
You know what? Maybe it was a regional thing. Maybe people in California were exposed to it
in California. Yeah.
Like, these.
I mean, now that I'm looking at it, it's sort of like, oh, I think I kind of remember this. And I definitely remember Richard Simmons. My mom used to watch Richard Simmons all the time.
Sweating to the oldies.
And now back to Deal a Meal with Richard Simmons.
Thank you. We're back.
I wonder if you tied someone's dietary performance to like a financial reward. If people would do it,
yes,
like would be successful at it. It's like, hey, you met your goal. Here's $100.
Maybe. That definitely sounds like something that's been studied. If you actually took the time to go look that up, I bet you'd find studies on that. That does not strike me as something unusual. Most of the good dietary programs involve not having to think. It's less about rewards and more about not having to put any effort. That's why Atkins and all those are so successful in their uptake. Not saying they're necessarily successful in keeping weight off, which that's a whole different thing. But people have success with them because I just eat all the protein I want and I don't have to think about it. That's what gets people doing them.
Yeah, but that's not the only part of the Atkins diet. It's like...
Well, no, it's not. But Atkins is a real... My point is that Atkins is a very easy thing for people to follow. If you actually follow good nutrition, it's more difficult.
Yeah. Well, I also have a bad habit of looking in my fridge and seeing what expires over the next week. And it's like, I better eat that before it goes bad.
but writing down... The reason writing down works is because you don't remember what you eat as well as you think you do. We're horrible. We as humans are horrible at actually... self-reporting accurately, and all of you, every single person listening is like, that's true for other people. Like that is the natural reaction to be like, yeah, I guess a lot of people are, or maybe sometimes I'm not. No, we are all, myself included, horrible at self-reporting. And so if you write it down, it makes you a little more accurate. And then it's a different matter of how people react, but at least you have a closer look at like, oh, that, wow, I am eating a lot of X. I didn't realize that.
I am only good at self-reporting up to like 40 hours. Anything beyond that,
I bet you're not
like
even as good at 40 hours as you think you are, though. That's just being a human.
This is a good illustrative
point. It's not asking you to tell me back what you ate over the last 40 hours. It's when you've got that fridge open and inside your head, you're like, well, I haven't had any juice in a while. Or, well, you know, I haven't, you know, it should be fine for me to eat that. That's the kind of self-reporting. Once you actually make the effort to remember and write and report, you're actually doing the exercise of writing it down.
Mm, I eat juice. I have juice every other day. So.
That might be
too
much.
It's always going to be part of my day.
And I bet you have it. I bet you don't really have it every other day. I bet if you actually logged, you'd find out that you have it like every 3 days or maybe two in a row sometimes and then every other day. Like that's what I'm saying.
Let us begin the contest, Tom.
By the way, this is not an attack on Roger. I'm saying I would be just as bad. Like we're just naturally bad at that as humans.
Roger, you're bad fatso.
No, definitely not. You're probably better at eating than most people.
I need to shed some weight.
Shed, he said. S-H-E-D. In case you heard something else, it's not what, it's not what he said.
I know I say some questionable things. Over
I knew
time,
what you said. I just making sure everyone heard the same thing that you actually said.
I remember one time in a production meeting, I said a word and it was very benign, and everyone else thought it was like a Luke. I was like, no, I did not say that. But I think it's just because it's me. It's like, well, you kind of expect it from me.
Well, you have a dry wit, so. Sometimes people will hear you say something and like, oh, he must be cracking one of his famous Roger jokes.
His famous Roger backhanded remarks.
His patented Roger barbs.
They're not even backhanded. They're just very blatant. You know, if you controlled your whatever better, you'd be a lot more successful with the ladies.
Why is that happening? So I just had twice now in the past minute, your audio just blanked out for like less than a half second.
Let me see. Talk, 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 talk.
Just a blip.
Talk, 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 talk.
Feels like an internet issue, or a codec issue. Not a connection issue. Not a cables or mic or anything. Yeah, it's fine. You're fine now.
Well, yeah. Hopefully, whatever broke the connection this morning hasn't. I hope it's not one of those guys who put like basically electrical tape around and twist the two cables together and then put electrical tape around.
Yeah, because your video's fine.
And I tested my speed right before, and surprisingly enough, my speed went up. It went up from
five. Well, probably because a bunch of people just quit using the internet this morning because it went down.
Man, I got to look into it. I was looking at AT&T, but they don't have anything on their Fios, even though that lady. And I used the term lady as a, I should probably say woman. Yes. 2 months ago, she came knocking to my door and saying they're laying out fiber.
Okay.
They want to be part of
it. Yeah.
But I don't see anything on the website regarding it.
Well,
so.
That's because they haven't laid it out yet.
Yeah.
They're probably going door to door to assess how many people would be willing to fork over for it.
I would pay for it, except I'm already on the initial introductory rate for Spectrum. Until December.
Need redundant connections though, man.
I do. I want super high bandwidth so I can do everything I do normally. Oh, and I found out what happened to the power. Remember I told you my power went out?
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess like down the block, you know, in the back, because the power lines run behind the homes, there was a tree, like an oak tree, and one of the branches fell and sat on the wire. Broke the connection. So whoever it was cutting their tree this past week.
So somebody cut the wire.
No, they didn't cut the wire. The tree, the branch fell on it. Ah. And so I guess it meant like, oh, you got to prune that tree. But from what everything, one of the guys was telling me, it's like everyone who does it wrong. They just kind of, he calls it the foxtail, where they just shave everything up the tree until they can't reach any higher, and then they stop. Mm-hmm. But the problem is the tree becomes top heavy.
So the problem was they didn't get to the stuff that fell. I see.
Well, the problem is they didn't cut the tree the right way or prune the tree the right way the first time.
So I'm talking to the folks in our Slack. We have a little channel in there called Testing Ground. About something called DTNS Labs. So the idea would be that we have the different contributors, including myself, try out different kinds of shows. So this is kind of sparked by Scott Johnson with his idea of doing a regular bit about the tech he uses for his art. But it also could be somewhere where Veronica could do more bot stuff and we could do more interview series. Things like that. So if you are an analyst, pop in the Slack, check out the Testing Ground channel, and we can start talking about it in there. Or you can just email us feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com or through the Patreon and let me know what you think. Because I just like the idea of establishing sort of a beta area so that the expectation isn't, okay, we're launching a thing. Here it is. And everybody's like, make or break. But it gives us a chance to try some stuff out.
It'll be awesome.
Like Roger's show about Roger things. What would you do?
Yes. Rogering, but not in that way.
Okay, no. Bad idea. Bad name. Yeah. Bad nomenclature. Yeah. Let's
try we'll work something on
else. I almost said back away, and then I was like, no. Try something else. But I know you talked about doing like not full on reviews, not traditional reviews, but like, you know, bits about working testing.
Like working basically giving my experience with a particular product over an extended period of time. So it wouldn't be so much a product review where you have a set of desired features and how well they meet those features and you comparison shop with another similar product. But like, for example, I have a Samsung Galaxy S6. I've had it for a year and a half, and I think it is possibly the best gosh darn smartphone I've had in quite some time. Granted, I have never used an iPhone other than testing purposes. But overall, I really like it. But things like that, you know, where like, oh, hey, I might be considering one of those. How does it work in the long haul? Kind of the way that Consumer Reports gives you their long-term road test for cars.
Yeah.
Because the initial review might be glowing, but having to live with a car for more than a few months is a lot different.
You could even talk to other people about their stuff. And
yes. How do you like those shoes? They're great.
Los zapatillos para andar.
Zapatos. Mis zapatos are Adidas or Adidas.
Mis zapatos son sus zapatos. That is when you know someone very well. That you share your shoes with them. It's like walking a mile in my shoes, literally.
I don't even share shoes with my family.
I knew that would creep you out.
You know, this is the one thing I've learned from doing rummage sales, like for fundraisers and stuff. No one ever buys shoes unless they're like high quality, like dress cowboy shoes. Boots or something.
Our boots, yeah. No, tennis shoes never sell. Tennis shoes never sell.
What's it? Gross, they're sweaty.
If they're like leather dress shoes or boots, yeah, something that's got a little more substance to them, maybe. But
and worn very infrequently. Like I'm not buying dress shoes if a guy's like a professional entertainer. I don't care unless I just want to put it under glass and say, hey, this is
I used to buy all my shoes at thrift store though. Back when I lived in Austin.
So you. Yeah, I can't do that. That and underwear. Those are the two things.
Oh, gosh, no, I would never, no. And I actually saw underwear for sale at a thrift store once.
Yes.
And I was just amazed.
They were boxers.
I mean, maybe if they were donated in the package, maybe. But definitely not like just out in the open.
Even if you're not, especially if you're not fashion conscious, you can buy those things by the dozen. For like $10. It's like, no, there's no need to.
Yeah, no, those are something even in my poorest days, I always paid retail for.
But one thing I did not, so like I've always known that vintage denim was a moneymaker, but I didn't realize the lengths that people go to shop. They like hit the thrift stores, but they hit the flea markets, they hit everything. They go to people's attics and they're picking out like, oh, you have some old pair of jeans.
Vintage denim, man. Well, because it wears pretty well.
I guess.
All righty. Are you ready to do this show?
Yes, but I need.
I believe you have control.
All right. You'll have talking web pages today.
Here we go. Daily Tech News Show is powered by you. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, August 28th, 2017. I'm Tom Merritt. Veronica Belmont prevented from joining us today by technical issues. Hopefully we will have her back next week. But in the meantime, our intrepid producer, Roger Chang, is still here. And it's a mailbag Monday, Roger.
Ah, yes. Our full and very, very filled mailbag.
This would be something that someone else gave me this idea, that maybe we would do off cycle, like outside the show, where we just go through emails and talk about them in its own show. So if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, let us know. feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. In the meantime, from time to time, we just have really interesting emails. And if that matches up with a day that doesn't have that spot on lock for a discussion, we'll just read a bunch of emails. And today is one of those days where we have good stuff. But let's start with a few tech things you should know. Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal have joined the chorus of people with sources saying Apple will have an announcement on September 12th, where they are likely to unveil, at the very least, new iPhones. Apple, of course, has not announced an event yet. But Roger, this is like, I don't know, this is the fifth credible source and the dozenth, like even slightly credible source that said September 12th. So kind of feel like that might happen.
I wonder if the brain trust at Apple kind of gets giddy when they see like rumor mills and stuff like, oh, they're talking about us. And I say this because part of me thinks this is kind of TMZ-ish, like, oh, they're having a light.
You think they're doing it to get attention?
But the other part of me understands that, yeah, this is a significant product release for the company, and it could change, you know, heavily the market in their favor or not. So, yeah. But it's cool. It's very close. It's very close. It's about what, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks?
Yes.
Away.
That would be correct. 15 yes. days away. The New York Police Department will scrap 36,000 Windows phones bought 2 years ago as Microsoft ends support. The New York Post says the department plans to replace them with iPhones. So,
No.
This is a 100 million plus mistake for the New York Police Department. Ouch.
So the NYPD Deputy Commissioner for IT, or Information Technology, Jessica Tisch, was the one saying
she's the one who put in place the original order for the Windows phones, and she's taking the heat for it now. But I'll be honest. Microsoft sold a lot of companies on Windows phones when they appeared to be willing to support them for a long time. And after 2 years, they would be selling the New York Police Department on upgrades to newer phones. Phones generally don't last, even in enterprise environments, more than, say, 5 years max. So I don't know that she deserves the amount of heat she's getting. It's kind of a bad coincidence for her. And it is bad that Apple pulled the plug on it. Microsoft.
Well, I'm wondering if this very quickly will make other institutions in the future kind of shy of perhaps investing in a Windows, or not Windows, but a Microsoft IT product that they like. Well, you know,
they're going to want to put it in their contract. This is going to be around for a while.
Buy it back. Buy yeah. them back.
A team from Munich Technical University won the SpaceX Hyperloop pod competition Sunday with a prototype that reached 324 kilometers per hour. It's about 201 miles per hour in a 1.2 kilometer tube at SpaceX headquarters right over there in Hawthorne, California. The WARR Hyperloop, as it was called, WARR, was made of carbon fiber, weighed 176 pounds, and was powered by a 50 kilowatt motor. So congratulations to the team from Munich Technical University.
Yeah, I'm hoping some of this stuff that they learn will find its way into an actual production Hyperloop that I'm taking to get to the Bay Area or something so I can skip the airports.
Here's some more top stories. Kara Swisher at Recode reports that Uber's board voted to offer the CEO job to Dara Khosrowshahi, who has been CEO of Expedia since 2005. Khosrowshahi also serves on the board of the New York Times. He often is ranked as one of the great CEOs to work for. He's been very critical of the current presidential administration. The plan, according to Recode, is to tell the Expedia employees he's leaving first, then holding a meeting at Uber to introduce him there. Bloomberg reports Khosrowshahi has unvested stock options worth $184.4 million. In Expedia. That's often a proxy for how much of a bonus somebody's going to get. So if they have $184.4 million unvested stock, the company hiring them away will usually make them good by giving them around the same amount as a bonus. It may or may not be cash or stock or something like that. But essentially the point of that is he's getting paid well. And it is a job that Jeffrey Immelt, former CEO of GE, apparently did not want, and that Meg Whitman apparently did not want, because those were the two names being bandied about all weekend as the folks Uber were after. This guy, though, has been CEO since 2005. He's been and he's well loved. I mean, that seems like a good get for Uber right now. They need somebody that can come in and create a positive company culture.
Creative positive culture, but like, you know, so not have any baggage, so you don't have this circus, media circus that constantly orbits around the company. And, you know, it's funny because it might not have any, it has an impact in a way that isn't seen, but it does affect the employees and as well as the perception of the company.
Well, it's a vicious circle, right? Because what's happening inside affects the employees really badly. And the media doesn't hear about it until something leaks out. Then it leaks out. People blame Uber. People maybe very rightly blame Uber. And then that affects employee morale, and around it goes, like you said.
Let's just hope he can put a cork in everything, so to speak.
Oh, wow. No, I do not envy him this job, and we will keep track. He's been offered the job. The way the reports from Recode are coming seem to be very clear that he is going to accept the job, but we have not got a confirmed report that he has, in fact, signed on the dotted line. So given the fact that this is Uber, I'm going to put, you know, 12% possibility on the fact that this falls through and they have to keep hunting for a CEO. But it does sound that they've finally settled on things. Somebody that I don't think a lot of people expected, but he is now thrown into the spotlight. This is in some ways similar to Marissa Mayer getting hired as CEO of Yahoo, because it's a company with a lot of trouble and a lot of spotlight on it. And it's someone, in this case, someone very experienced as a CEO, but someone that is not well known in the media circles of technology.
Could help. I mean, that little bit.
Yeah. Microsoft is making several mixed reality announcements at IFA in Berlin. Steam VR games are going to work on Windows mixed reality devices. That's big. Microsoft's also going to have versions of Minecraft and Halo for their VR devices. Windows mixed reality will work on a wider variety of PCs. Now, it'll only work at 60 frames per second on PCs with integrated graphics, but it will work if you don't get nauseous, and then it'll work at 90 frames per second on PCs with discrete graphics. Windows mixed reality devices need USB or HDMI ports, but they don't need you to set up any external sensors. The devices are set to arrive by the holiday season in general. Dell announced theirs is coming in October, and the prices range from $299 to $399. That $399 includes some packages that have the motion controllers bundled in, at which point that's everything you need right there in one package. Now, that sounded really cheap when Microsoft first announced this effort back earlier this year. Now that the prices of the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive have been cut down to $399 and $499, this doesn't seem as competitive on the price, but it still is easier to hook up. You don't need the motion sensors, etc.
And you know, having Steam VR support, huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
So anything in the Steam VR store for the HTC Vive, for instance, theoretically can work on Windows mixed reality devices.
I think Microsoft just really needs to do a much better job of explaining this to the consumer, because, you know, mixed reality, it's like, you know, Microsoft mixed reality. Wait, is that the same thing as HoloLens? So what's HoloLens? And so there's all these things that are tied to the Microsoft name, but there's no clear distinction, at least for a consumer. And so, you know, I understand what the Oculus VR is. I understand what the Vive is. So, you know, it's something that they need to, I think, really work on is messaging and kind of clearing up the confusion around all their efforts.
Well, and I think what they're hoping is that when these products hit the shelves, that's when it will become clear. Because this is a very Microsoft approach to say, we're not putting out our own products here. That's what HoloLens is. HoloLens is the flagship that points the way. What we're saying is Windows can handle VR. The Windows Fall Creators Update can handle VR. And so we want to have some devices out there when that launches. And I think that's when you see the consumer education push. Windows Fall Creators Update arrives. These devices hit the shelves. And then Microsoft goes into full press consumer mode to say, hey, you don't have to, you know, you can use the laptop you have. You can use the desktop you have if you can handle 60 frames per second. Buy this $299 VR headset and be in the VR game in a way that's better than the Gear VR or the Daydream, because it's going to have a little more oomph being connected to your PC.
Maybe. I mean, it's getting to be a crowded field. I mean, you really kind of want to make your things stand out early on.
Is it a crowded field? It feels like there's just not enough. There's the Vive and the Oculus Rift, and PlayStation VR just got a price drop of about $50 as well. That's about it if you're not talking about the ones that are based on phones.
Well, and see, this is the important thing for the consumer. They don't make that distinction. They just concentrate on the word VR, and that's what they focus on. And I think this is why I was stressing about Microsoft needs to get the messaging right about their products, because people will easily get confused. Because, I mean, it's easy for us to say, like, we understand the difference between a phone-based VR and, you know, a full-on headset and all that, because we understand this market. But for consumers, I mean, what they're going to be looking at during the holiday season is, you know, hey, does this support Minecraft? Will this work with Jimmy's, you know, phone or whatever? Like, you know, they want very straightforward buying options. It doesn't mean they want a limited option.
I think that's Microsoft's advantage here, is to say, oh, no, you don't need to have a particular phone. You just plug this into your PC. Done.
Yep. Hopefully.
Fitbit has a new smartwatch called Ionic. The watch focuses on health and fitness with readings for step count, heart rate, and calories burned right there next to your date and time. A limited number of partner apps are available at launch, including Starbucks, Strava, and Pandora. It's going to sell for $299, and you can also separately purchase a Bluetooth headphones headset called Flyer for $129. The Flyer, you know, it's sweatproof. It's got some wings to keep it in your ears, but otherwise it's pretty similar to other Bluetooth headsets for working out that you might find out there. Both the Ionic and the Flyer arrive in October, and this is the fulmination of Fitbit's many acquisitions, including Pebble. And I'm not seeing an impressive app store launching at the beginning, which I think a lot of people hoped, because of Pebble, that would happen. It may still happen. In fact, Fitbit intends for it to still happen. But it's Fitbit presiding over a diminishing lead that they're losing to Apple in this space. And it's a space that's not very big to begin with and doesn't seem to be growing at a rapid pace.
It was kind of described as kind of their Hail Mary pass. Like, you know, this could make or break. And the thing about wearables is I'm not convinced that apps are as crucial to wearables in the same way that they have been to smartphones.
Why do you say and that? So that's interesting.
This could very well pull them out of the doldrums, or it could not. I mean, for me, this is kind of a sit back and wait. But I think if they, and this is what they're doing, they're leveraging their fitness tracking technology heavily in this phone.
And Apple's doing the same thing, right? Apple's focusing on fitness as well. That's pretty much everybody's decided for now. Wearables, you sell wearables by selling the fitness aspect of them. So that's not a big surprise. What's different about this is Fitbit is actually making it more watch and less Fitbit. The Fitbit Blaze, for instance, was very much a fitness tracker with some watchy stuff on it. This is a full-on watch with a lot of fitness stuff on it. And they're really touting their personal training and training plans and that sort of thing. But all in all, it does not seem like a big departure. It's certainly more affordable than an Apple Watch, but it's not cheap by any stretch. I'm curious. I want to go back to what you said about you don't think that the App Store is the compelling part of this. Why do you say that?
I honestly don't see. I mean, you have a smartwatch, and I've only played with smartwatches.
I don't actually have one currently. No,
I thought you had it for some reason.
I had one for a while, and I don't anymore.
But I think when. The part of this is just a gut feeling. I have a feeling that most people who purchase these will not be as overly app focused as they are on the phone, mostly because of the way you use a watch. Like, I guess you could have a bunch of really cool non-fitness oriented apps on your watch, but
fitness apps on the watch, and you want your music, yeah, and then you want your calendar, and then you know what I mean? Like, yeah, granted, you probably don't need an app store full of thousands of apps, but you are going to want the ones you need and use. And if I use the Nike Plus app for my fitness tracking and I look at this watch and it doesn't have that app, I'm going to be less likely to buy it.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't think apps, when I say apps, I don't think in the same way that you go to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store, where you literally have thousands, mm-hmm, of apps that you can pick and choose from. I think, at least for now, I think the public and the companies have decided these are essentially fitness enhancers that allow you to track, all your entire fitness regimen, but also, you know, basically kind of bridge the gap between that and your smartphone.
Yeah. That's where the apps need to be. And it looks like the problem is that the Ioniq doesn't have a lot of any kind of apps, fitness or otherwise, at least at launch. Amazon cut prices at its newly owned Whole Foods stores by 43% Monday. At least that's how Bloomberg estimates. Bloomberg cited examples at a Manhattan location of Fuji apples going from $3.49 to $1.99 a pound, rotisserie chicken falling from $13.99 to $9.99 each. The Amazon Echo and Echo Dot was also presented front and center in some stores as a fresh pick of the month. I went over to our local Whole Foods to check this out. Be like, okay, what do they got? Fuji apples were $1.99, but there was no indication that this was a price drop. According to this Bloomberg article, the price drop was being noted in the Manhattan location. Like, oh, it used to be this, but because of Amazon, we've brought it down. There was not a whisper that Whole Foods was now owned by Amazon at the store I went to. Now, whether that's just because they didn't get on the stick on day one, whether it's because maybe my neighborhood they know is sort of anti-Amazon. I don't know that it is, but I could get that idea of like maybe people don't see Amazon as a plus at this particular Whole Foods. We'll just lower the prices and keep it quiet. There were definitely no Amazon Echoes on display or anything. The only thing I saw at my local Whole Foods was big signs for online ordering everywhere. And those may have been there before. I don't go to Whole Foods that often. But they weren't Instacart branded. They were just online ordering, go to WholeFoods.com. So they were definitely pushing a technology portion of the service, but no, it did not look like there was any Amazon going on.
What surprised me is how much of the impact of the whole Amazon buying Whole Foods really resonated, not just in the U.S., not just in the North American market, but across the world. I mean, Britain, you know, the British supermarkets all taking note because everyone is like suddenly, whoa, this is an entirely new operation for Amazon, but this is an operation that's going to cut to the bone for us. And I think what's interesting is how much of these price drops really kind of overlap the premium stuff that current supermarkets do, right? So Vons and Ralph's have over the past decade have tried to upscale a lot of their ready-to-eat offerings or kind of their not deli but their bakery or other
prepared foods.
Prepared food offerings. This really just puts it in line, like the $10 rotisserie chicken from Whole Foods. I mean, that's exactly the same price point that Ralph does.
Mm-hmm.
The
Fuji apples used to be 99 cents a pound. They're a little bit out of season right now, so they've gone up to $1.49 at Ralph's, but they're still cheaper than they are at Whole Foods. Now, that may be because they're not organic and they're sourced differently. I don't know. But I have a feeling that what Amazon's trying to do here is take away that part of me that says, well, I don't want to go to Whole Foods because the prices are more expensive. And to do that, they just need to make it close so that the other things that a customer might like about Whole Foods make it like, well, if I pay 40 cents extra a pound, 50 cents extra a pound for my apples, no big deal. I'll be able to get a better selection of apples, say. And that's what the other grocery stores are scared of because price was the big advantage they had. And then, like you say, they can have prepared foods and organics. Like Costco's really pushing their organic selection. Well, now suddenly it's like, well, I can get organics at both places. And if the prices aren't that different, why would I want to pay a membership at Costco for that? So it really resets the table and the competitive balance.
Resets the table.
You like that?
Yeah, I know. And I'm expecting a lot of changes in my local supermarket over the next couple of years.
Amazon, Whole Foods makes a profit, or an operating profit anyway. Operating income is in the hundreds of millions. Amazon makes like $800 million or so. These are rough numbers from its Amazon Web Services, and that kind of subsidizes everything else. They have a loss in their international retail. They make a little bit of money on their domestic retail, and so they can afford to slash that $100 million Whole Foods and let Amazon Web Services continue to subsidize the company. They've got room to move here. It's not just as simple as Amazon always has low profit margin, but Amazon is okay playing with low profit margin in certain sectors of their business.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to definitely see how all this shakes out over the next couple of years. I mean, the there are things I definitely buy that aren't available at Whole Foods, so they have that.
The Intercept reports that security researcher Zachary Julian notes that the anonymous feedback app Saraha that we've talked about, that's the one where you can post up your link and people can send you anonymous messages, and it's tended to be positive messages. It uploads users' email and phone contacts to its servers.
What?
With permission. Okay, so there's some reports out there that's saying, well, on Android, it didn't used to ask for permission, and it always has on iOS, but now it does ask for permission on Android. The controversy here, I think, is getting blown out of proportion in the headlines, but there is a tiny bit of controversy, which is, why are you even asking? Like, yes, I can say no, don't upload my contacts, fine, but why does it need the information? Well, the app's founder took to Twitter and said that the upload is for a planned Find Your Friends feature, which, if it's anonymous feedback, I'm not sure exactly why you need to find your friends, and it hasn't launched yet. But that is a use that many apps will say, hey, can we look at your contacts? Amazon's Alexa does that as well. The data request will be removed in the next update, however. Saraha is pulling back from this. So this is one of those instances where a lot of people are getting outraged, thinking that the app does something worse than it does, but it is a little sloppy for an app to be asking for something without making it clear why it needs that or having clear terms of service of what it's going to do with that information.
I honestly don't think it's anything nefarious or malicious. I just think it's one of those things like, oh, you know, if we can, we'll just bug him for that particular set of data.
Because we can use it for these future ideas.
For not just that one idea of finding your friends, but, you know, a multitude. Yeah. It's like, well, it's better to have it.
No, from a developer standpoint, this makes perfect sense, right? Like, oh, let's ask for the data so that we have it when we need it. We don't know exactly what we need it for, but we want to have it. From a privacy standpoint, though, no, that is not okay.
No. And that's one of the disconnects, I think, when you develop and engineer software. You think in terms of the overall database or the infrastructure, without necessarily understanding may not be especially cognizant of any kind of legal or social ramifications beyond of what you're immediately doing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once you start thinking about it, it's like, maybe not such a good idea.
Well, I wanted to make sure it's not actually that big of a story, because I don't think there's no data breach involved. There's no overreach. They were asking for permission, and it seems like almost all the cases. But it's something you should know about, because you're going to see a lot of people outraged about it. And if you want to be outraged about it, that's fine. Just be outraged for the right reasons.
Hey, listen, when you have a headline that says Saraha harvests your phone contact
by asking you for it without telling you what they're going to do for it. Hey, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to DailyTechHeadlines.com. Daily Tech Headlines gets you up to speed every day. You can get it as a podcast or on your Amazon Echo. I think it's on your Google Home finally now. I think we worked out the kinks there. And of course, it's in the Anchor app at anchor.fm. Also want to thank all the participants in our subreddit at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com, the folks at our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow, keeping all kinds of good information flowing into the show, but also to each other. That's one of the things we value here at DTNS, is the community of listeners out there talking to each other as well. Before we get into the mailbag, though, we should probably check in with Chris Christensen. Except that I didn't actually load his bit early, so I'm going to have to tap dance here for a second, Roger. But Chris Christensen is going to tell us some pretty cool marrying of high-tech hotel ideas.
marrying.
Yeah. And when I say awesome. Marrying, I say bringing different high-tech hotel ideas together. Tell us, Chris.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. Every week I seem to hear another story about a hotel that is trying to get some press because they are becoming the most high-tech hotel. In this case, it's a story of a downtown Buffalo hotel, a Buffalo New Westin hotel.
Why does that happen? All right, let's try that again.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. Every week I seem to hear another story about a hotel that is trying to get some press because they are becoming the most high-tech hotel. In this case, there's a story of a downtown Buffalo hotel in Buffalo, New York, the Westin Hotel, that already had a robotic butler so that it would deliver things to your room. And now they're combining that with the Amazon Echo. They're putting Amazon Echoes in each of their 116 rooms, and you can order things through there using a skill that has been created for it and have things delivered to your room by an electronic butler. It seems like just about the perfect thing for somebody like me who's an introvert who would just as soon talk to Alexa and get something delivered by a robot. You can order towels, toothbrushes, shampoo, and other basics from the main desk. I thought it was pretty cool. I'm Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Would you want to do it, Roger? Would you want to talk to your hotel room's Amazon Echo and have it bring you a toothbrush?
No. I honestly go to hotel rooms, and the last thing I want to do is see anyone else. I kid you not, as soon as I get into the door of a hotel room, I take that little card that says, do not disturb, and I leave it on the outside until I leave.
But but that's it, right? You wouldn't have to see a person because it's the robot that brings it to you.
I don't want anyone knowing when I'm in or out. I'm very weird that way.
Yeah, but the robot could just leave it at your door.
It's just, no one needs to know.
So what you're saying, Roger, is this even with robots and Amazon Echoes involved, has too many people.
Just too many ears. They might not all be human ears. Too many ears.
Let's get to our emails. Ward writes, hey, Tom, was chatting with a security guard in a coffee shop up here in central Alberta, Canada, and asked where he was working. He said, at the construction of a Bitcoin mine near Three Hills, Alberta. Apparently, it's a server farm. Location makes sense, really. Stable power grid, low population, environmentally stable, almost non-existent as far as natural disasters go, and stable, if not completely submissive, provincial government. Anyway, thought I would drop this to you and see what you thought, longtime listener of the show. I love the idea that Alberta is mining country, Bitcoin mining country.
They have the real estate to do it, and you know, it does make sense. I mean, I don't know much about Three Hills, but I assume it's. Or I should probably look it up. But this is actually a great idea. I mean, I'm thinking of all the towns and the cities that used to have a thriving industry that because of technology no longer requires that company. So whether it's mining like the silver mines in Nevada, whether it's you know, some sort of textile processing. This would be great because some of these towns have, and they have a lot of available land. And for the most part, most of them have infrastructure like power that leads into it. So this would be something that, you know, some places might be wanting to look into. Not specifically Bitcoin, but, you know, something along the same lines.
Joe, formerly from DC, but now based in Sweden, was hearing us have our discussion about just-in-time learning on Friday's show, and said, I wanted to write in as I think there was some downplaying on what a great resource YouTube, etc. can be. Working half my time in Ghana, I've met people here who are working on projects, etc., where they don't have another person they can call for an answer, or even know a person who might impart baseline knowledge, especially on some things like electronics. Despite that, there's a growing community of using things like Arduinos and Raspberry Pis, especially coming out of local technical universities where they have good access to an internet connection. It really is amazing how often you can now push the edge of your knowledge and find someone online who knows that bit extra in a specific area. So he's like, just in time learning may not be right for all situations. We were talking about kids mostly on the show Friday, but it's really helpful in places like Ghana, apparently. And he does say that having limited data connections when he is in Ghana totally changes what he's willing to spend his time watching on YouTube, because you have to really commit and say, okay, it's worth going through a bit of my data plan to download that YouTube video and watch it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, my argument isn't that they're, it's bad, but it shouldn't be in lieu of just traditional education. Like, it could it's a complementary thing for me.
Yeah.
It complements.
Well, and I think what he was saying is yes. And in fact, in places where there is nothing to complement it, it's essential. It's world changing for people who wouldn't have that information at all otherwise. We got another email that says, as a driver and dispatch for a small trucking company, I have a slightly different perspective on the rumored Tesla Semi. The range is just a third of what my semis can run, and any self-driving function is useless. Really? Useless? Since it's for local runs, I can find drivers willing to do that under every rock. But finding drivers for something beyond home every night is extremely difficult. My trucks normally have a range of 1,200 miles and can go up to 1,400 miles, possibly more, depending on weather conditions. One of my drivers doing a local run will go about 500 miles in a day, possibly more. What the Tesla truck will really compete against is the companies that are testing natural gas on their day cabs, short-haul trucks. The real need for innovation and self-driving is in the long-haul loads, as finding drivers for that is quite difficult, and programming to drive on an interstate or highway should be far simpler than attempting program for city driving. Now, to be clear, the Tesla thing was saying self-driving was a goal for them. It was 200 to 300 mile range electric trucks. They were not self-driving. So when he says self-driving is useless, I wonder if it's really as useless as you say, if you can convoy a bunch even on a short haul. But that's not what Tesla's after immediately. What Tesla's coming with immediately, according to that report we had last week, was the shorter haul, the short end of the long haul, the 200 to 300. And it sounds like he's involved in these legitimately long haul runs of 1200 to 1400 miles. And that's not where Tesla's ready to help out yet.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the Tesla Semi might definitely find legs in areas where you're just shifting trailers. You know, back when I worked over at, Tri-Valley, they do a lot of shipping of tomatoes during tomato season. They have just a tractor that pulls empty trailers around to load them up, but they don't actually move out of the yard itself. And so I could totally see a Tesla Semi doing that, because, you know, you could, if the batteries are user replaceable, where you could just swap them out and just keep some charged continuously, it would be totally useful.
Another Jay Martin combines these last two emails and says, hey, after your talk on Friday about knowing how to change a flat tire, I had a thought about our possible future. Do the makers of self-driving cars have a plan for when they break down, like getting a flat tire? Will it expect the occupant to change the tire, or will it call a service station on its own? Will a self-driving tow truck come to take the broken down car and replace it with another? Just wondering if anyone's heard of what the plan is, or what you think will happen. I have not heard what the plan is. Those are all interesting suggestions, though.
Run flat tires.
Yeah, maybe they'll just all have
run flat tires. Once you get a puncture in it.
Yeah.
So there's several ways I think they could accomplish this, some of them more energy intensive. One is they could have a central inflation system like they do on super secure, like heavy armor.
Okay, but hold on. Before you go too far down the how to fix a flat tire on a self-driving car road, what about the malfunction that you didn't plan for? What about when that central tire system malfunctions? What about the central question of what happens when your self-driving car breaks down? Because you can't make them proof from ever breaking down.
Well, I mean, you would just give them a system like GM's OnStar, where they would just put your car up in a flatbed, you get in the cab and say, take me home, here's the address, here's my credit card.
Yeah, I think another Jay Martin suggestion of sending another car to carry you the rest of your way is probably going to have to be part of that. Real quickly, Ethan said he's nitpicking, but it's his field of study, and he wanted to make a quick point about quadcopters. Generally speaking, the more rotors a vehicle has, the less efficient it is, and Ethan doesn't think we'll see flying vehicles in exploration missions off-planet that have more than two rotors. The advantage of multi-rotor systems is high maneuverability. While it would be cool, space missions care more about stability and efficiency. And then finally, Jeff says, do you or anyone in the DTNS audience have games on Android or web-based to teach a young child and parent game programming? He wants to teach his daughter to code video games. Maybe even direct us to a subreddit. That would be helpful. We watched some YouTube tutorials on the Unity game engine, but it was over our head. My five-year-old daughter is very interested in creating a video game, and we've gone through her ideas and written them down, but neither my wife or I have experience in the game development arena. The closest I've come to is VB in Excel. We're hoping it will help jumpstart other areas of learning, like reading, math, and science for her as well. So, yeah, folks, send us your thoughts, and we'll forward them on to Jeff. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com.
I will suggest to check out Yo-Yo Games Game Maker. Mm-hmm. Now, this is kind of it's a integrated development environment, but I remember when it first came out, and the whole concept behind Game Maker was to basically democratize game development. So even people without a very deep programming background would be able to successfully create a game. And like, I'm not talking about like Minecraft or Halo or anything like that, but you know, something that someone could learn from and build skills upon, if not directly programming, but understanding how things work in terms of, you know, various aspects of game design.
Yeah. So Yo-Yo Games, Y-O-Y-O Games, .com if you want to check that out. And like I said, email us and we'll send other suggestions on to Jeff as well. Hey, thanks to everybody who gives a little value back to this show for the value they get from the show. Our goal every month is to have at least one more patron than last month. Although this Friday, we're going to announce a new goal for September. So that shouldn't stop you from backing us. If you've been thinking about it, we still want to get one more patron than last year, or last month, rather. And we appreciate everyone who continues to support us at patreon.com/DTNS. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Patrick Beja. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
All righty. Good show, Roger. What should we call it? Cool.
NYPD blew it on the Windows phone.
Nice. If the NYPD blue it, screen of death of your phone plan.
You must acquit. Is that how you spell acquit? I think there's a...
What, say it again?
If the apps don't fit bit, you must acquit. Get it?
I don't know.
Referencing something a little too...
No, I mean, I think acquit has a C in it, but that's beside the point. I don't understand about acquitting. I don't know what that has to do with the story.
Get it? You must acquit. You got to quit the
phone. Quit using the phone. Yeah. I see. All right. I get it now. Thank you.
Mailbag Monday. Amazon says, how do you like dem apples? Microsoft dupes NYPD.
You mean the Fuji apples?
Fuji apples. They're a band, you know. Smartwatches are dumb. Wholesale foods. Half paycheck. Whole paycheck Amazon foods. Sarah Ha is sloppy, not sly.
I like that one.
Provide credentials to be anonymous. I like that's pretty funny.
Provide credentials to be anonymous is funny too.
Expensive mistake. Uber Go uses Expedia to find CEO. That's pretty funny too. Windows phones goes blue screen on the men in blue. Microsoft's mixed reality messaging.
That's the blue screen joke I was looking for. Thank you, Silverblade.
Fitbit flies with Ionic. Fitbit hopes last watch flies. Oh, latest watch flies.
I do like, you mentioned this one, right? Uber uses Expedia to find CEO.
Yes. I like that one too. I think that was really funny. War, what is it good for? Going 200 miles per hour.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Whole Foods half price. Whole Amazon Foods reset the table. Aha, Sarah Ha. Disney cars, real life. Going too far down the flat tire road. You know, what's interesting is they're working on a replacement for the pneumatic tire. So the tire of the future won't be.
Oh, yeah. You know, I didn't mean to cut you off on the different tire potentials, but I felt like we were going down a rabbit hole. And the central question is, like, what do you do in a breakdown? But tell me more about those technologies, because that is fascinating.
Well, you could do what they like. So, for people who get those personalized armored cars because their lives are so valuable, They have a central tire inflation system.
Do you
system.
Know a lot of those people? Because I sure do.
No, I wish, because then I'd be rolling in it somehow, some way, maybe through osmosis. Mm-hmm. They have a central tire inflation. So if you get a flat, they just keep filling it up with air until you get to your destination. Run flat tires that they sell, GM puts them on Corvettes.
Right.
They're good. If you get it flat in it, you can drive up to 55 miles an hour on them until you get to your destination because their sidewalls are stiff enough to keep the car rolling on them. And yeah, like in the future, they're planning on trying to develop tires that don't require you having a rubber donut with air in it. So if you get a puncture in it, it's just like,
yeah. Well, and I think that's fair is that, you know, one of the things that gets undercovered in car technology is the technology that prevents breakdowns and stops cars from breaking down as often.
Well, you know, if you go full electric, your breakdown issues are probably going to drop by 50%, if not higher.
Because there's so many parts of the combustion engine that you just don't have to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to worry about filling the air, checking the steering fluid, the brake fluid, all the other
fluids. Wait, you don't need steering fluid in an electric car? Why don't
I'm sure they... I'm wondering if they're using... I think they're using electric boost, but I'm not sure if those use hydraulic... like fluid to turn the wheel.
But that's not directly related to the combustion engine, is it?
Well, there's just a lot of fluids you need to check that over time.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of things that can go wrong.
There's a lot more parts, that's for sure. Because you have an entire engine that needs to create the power, whereas the battery is the thing that creates the power in an electric car.
Well, and then you have so many things attached to the engine. Mm-hmm. You have your air conditioner, you have your transmission. Anything that's dynamic, anything that turns, requires lubrication.
Because I feel like a lot of that stuff is independent of whether it's an electric or gas motor.
Well, you don't have a transmission in an electric car in the normal sense, right? You don't have. It's not a stick, and it's not an automatic transmission.
So yeah, that one's directly related. It's just a continuous variable transmission.
Well, I'm not even sure if they would do that. They don't have. They have. They
well,
have.
That's for hybrids. You're right. They may not need it at all in electric.
You don't. They don't need it. They could use it to increase efficiency, but the weight savings that they get from not having it and the reduced complexity, I think, generally outweighs.
And they need
it.
To save that weight because they're needed in battery.
Yeah, and they have a reduction gear, and the electric motors are good on torque. It's the same reason why trains don't have transmissions, electric trains.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah, a lot of cars have electric boosted steering. But P-Squared's pointing out, and JPEG both, that with electric cars you can have drive-by-wire.
You know, they tried that once. A lot of people didn't like them because there's no feedback feel through the steering wheel. And so people
fake
felt
up
like
the feedback,
just,
yeah.
It's kind of like driving a video game where there's no... I guess they could put force feedback into it.
Yeah. You can actually update that. Another reason to update the firmware of your car.
That's how they're going to get you. Instead of having you...
Do you want the high quality force feedback?
Oh, well, I'll get
the base model has none. So you can get the basic force feedback. You can get the really good force feedback.
Oh, I see your steering wheel's a Logitech.
Oh, yeah. Then you could upgrade your steering wheel itself.
So let me see. What do we have? NYPD blew it on Windows Phone as tops.
I like Uber uses Expedia to find CEO. Yes, that's kind of the big news of the day, too.
You know what? He seems like a pretty button-down guy. He could be the one, hopefully.
He could be the one to break the
spell. There's like shenanigans inside of shenanigans at that company. And then I don't know. I've been in a dysfunctional department before, and I can say that stuff spins out fast, and no one ever gets no one ever controls it until it makes everyone look bad. Then people are like, well, we better do something.
Although. All right. I'm going to publish this podcast. What do you think?
You should.
Is it a wise idea?
I need Facebook.
Do you have a Whole Foods near you? How far is the closest Whole Foods to you?
Yeah, it's about 2 miles away, 2.5 miles away.
All right.
3 miles away. It's not bad.
I almost probably asked you to go check out yours to see if it was any different than mine, because I was, but it was so late by the time I went to mine, because I just assumed mine would have the Amazon stuff up. And when it didn't, I was like, whoa, what's up with that?
That's noticed weird. Something weird about Whole Foods here that I haven't noticed in the one in the Bay Area is that it's literally filled with every like local stereotype, like of people. Like, you know, these are the super, super healthy vegan, whatever.
Well, that's
like in San Francisco, they just look like every other person who either
shops. That's because in San Francisco, those stereotypes shop at co-ops. They don't want to shop at that big corporate monolith.
Oh. I always get a chuckle when I go to the Whole Foods here.
We have our Whole Foods near us is full of a lot of moms. That's what I notice.
I don't get that. I get like young hipster LA people.
No, we have a lot. We have a lot of moms. And some of them are yoga pants, you know, mom age, and I'm just guessing they're moms, but also a lot of them with kids.
There's some with kids. Most of them are like, the ones I see are like in their late 20s, early 30s. They dress pretty well. Like it's expensive clothing. So it's just like, they're all piling into their Beamers or Audis. Maybe the occasional Fiat 5000.
Ethan Kane wants to know if there's a philosophy behind our YouTube thumbnails. And I told him that you pick them. And my only guidance has ever been, don't put me in every one of them.
And that's my rule of thumb. And since YouTube doesn't let you scrub the video, and I've done this occasionally, I'll take the video and I'll scrub through it and pull a thumbnail. But I try to get the guest or, you know, a popular expression off someone's face.
Well, yeah, I think what people when Roger means is that YouTube will select 3 potential thumbnails for you that you can just pick, and then if you want to pick a different one, you can't just scrub through and pick one. You have to actually do it. Capture and edit it yourself. So if they don't have, if they suggest 3 and you don't like any of them, you'll make it yourself is what you're saying, but you don't do it that often. Is that right?
You could do it if I think like, oh, this guest, like it's someone we don't normally get.
And YouTube didn't select any for it.
Yeah. Generally does a pretty good job. Usually only one of them is your face.
That's good.
But sometimes it goes weird and it's nothing but your face.
No, there was a stretch before I had you start doing it where I was like, every time I started to go and make them myself, because every day it was picking 3 thumbnails of just me. I couldn't figure out why.
It knows you were picking them and it was trying to polish your ego or whatever the hell the phrase is.
Polish
your ego. Polish.
Polish. You mean Polish, my ego.
Ah, Polish. Polish dogs. Those are one of the
Kielbasa,
best
my deals. Ego, please.
Those are some of the best deals at the Costco food court. Their pizzas are, I don't know. People buy their pizzas. I've eaten them twice and I've never been happy. Mm. 3 more sleeps until tracking. Oh, I need to find a Thursday.
Yeah, that's right. We need a Thursday guest.
Is unfortunately out. Mm. Made some joke that he was going to Burning Man, but
I would definitely pay to see video of Aya's at Burning Man. All right. Thanks everybody for watching and listening. You guys are the best. And we will see you tomorrow with Patrick Beja. And you patrons, you guys rock the party the hardest. We're actually up a few patrons now over last month, and that's because of you, because you're a patron. So keep it up. Thank you. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you for supporting the show.